Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the new media show. My name is Todd Cochran, and we have my co-host Rob Greenlee on the bottom. Good morning, Rob. How are you this morning?
Doing great, Todd. It's great to be here again.
And I tell you, I've been excited about this show for a couple of weeks now. When I first saw that you had scheduled our guest, of course, our guest today is Norm Patisse from Podcast One. And I'm excited to talk with Norm this morning. Good morning, Norm. How are you?
Good morning. It's only Patisse in France. The rest of the world, it's Patisse.
Oh, sorry, Patisse. And you know what's going to happen?
Well, it just came from France, so I guess it makes sense.
And you know what's going to happen this morning is I'll probably do that five times in a row. So the brain is already... my apologies. But really excited to talk with you, Norm, about what you guys got going on, you know, over at Podcast One, what you guys are doing. You guys are tearing things up and moving fast. I love that to see a player in a space that is motivated and I hate to say it this way, but breathing new fire into the space. So, you know, what are you guys first off, why don't you just go ahead and give everyone a little background, Norm, about, you know, what you've done in the past, and I think that will kind of set the tenor here this morning.
Well, thanks. First of all, it's great to be with both of you. You know, I know you both. You know, Rob, you and I have chatted a few times, and Todd, I certainly know you by reputation. So it's a real pleasure to be able to sit down with you and chat. I started out in this business about 35 years ago and founded a. I had done some things before that, but my biggest claim to fame is that I founded a company called Westwood One, which I was the chairman of until a couple of years ago. And Westwood One was the largest producer and distributor of nationally sponsored radio programming, certainly in the nation, probably in the world. We owned, managed, or distributed NBC. Radio, CBS News, CNN, plus we provided lots and lots and lots of entertainment programming in the talk genre and the music genre, you know, countdown shows, live concerts, whatever you can imagine. And, you know, we dealt with probably 50% of the licensed radio stations in America. It's no coincidence that our move into on-demand audio, or as we call it, podcasting, that we created a destination and a site that's called Podcast One, because the story of Westwood One to Podcast One is an interesting story to tell. And the reason we moved in this direction was because of all of the similarities that I saw between forming Westwood One at a time when syndicated radio shows and network radio shows were not really very well thought of, or even, you know, part of the overall media mix of national advertisers. It seemed to me that podcasting today, you know, is pretty much in the place where syndicated radio was when I started Westwood One, which was the original reason why it caught my interest. We're programmers. We produce, programming for audio, which is what we did at Westwood One. A lot of our product was distributed, but most of it was produced and distributed. And that's what we expect to be able to do at Podcast One as well.
So I find it interesting that you guys, you mentioned that you left as the chair over at Westwood One, and then... So you decided then to jump into the new media space, and you know, as I look at the new media space, I thought we'd be a lot farther along than where we are already, and what excited you? You know, podcasting's already, you know, technically about 8 years old. We're probably still in our infancy stage, I guess. But what really excited you about the space? Where did you see the highest potential?
Well, look, that's one of the things that attracted me to it. You know, we're not first movers here by any reasons. Podcasting's been around for a long time. In some ways, it has lived up to its promise the ease of access to consumers has become much better, much easier. But you know, in terms of what a lot of people thought it could turn into instantaneously, it probably hasn't gotten there yet. I mean, when you take a look at most of the surveys that have been done, probably less than 35% of the public has ever downloaded a podcast. To me, that created an opportunity. The opportunity was that this is a medium that has shown significant growth, that will show even more growth going forward because of, you know, the nature of the radio business and the changes that have taken place there, the on-demand nature of consumers today and what's going on in video, and what it's really needed was, you know, a serious player to come in and, you know, and kind of champion the medium and, you know, go to Madison Avenue and you know, evangelize and, you know, and explain to advertisers, much as I did when we got started in syndicated radio, why they are missing a tremendous opportunity. But in order to do that, we had to give them the notion of critical mass. The podcasting business right now has several successful players in it. But in terms of other media, traditional media, and even in new media that's expanding rapidly, we're still thought of as kind of a mom and pop operation, you know, with one or two or 300 programs that deliver significant audience, that by themselves advertisers aren't terribly interested in. But if you accumulate that audience and you go into an advertiser with the critical mass to be able to get them to look at putting them in their overall media mix, along with things like network television and network radio and all the new media that's becoming popular to advertisers, then we think you've really got something. So that's what we've tried to do. We represent some of the most popular podcasts, audio podcasts that are out there today, and we've started producing some of our own podcasts, which have had pretty good levels of success in a very short time.
Rob, I know that you've been worried about the growth. You want to go into that at all?
Yeah, I was just wanting to raise the whole topic of you know, I don't think that we all think yet that there's enough listeners out there. Is there, what is it going to take, do you think, for us to get to 75% of people in the U.S. and around the world actually consuming this kind of content on an on-demand radio thing? There's so much kind of hype and movement towards video, and so how do you see those two things kind of working together, or are we going to see a big uptick in demand for the audio side at some point based on these big name talents that you're bringing to the table? If you could share some of your thoughts on those issues, that would be great.
Well, sure. First of all, I think there is plenty of audience out there to be able to attract big national advertisers, especially with the fact that most advertisers are hyper-targeting their ads more and more and more in order to be focused on reaching their consumers. In the golden days of network television, when network television shows delivered a 40 share, the advertisers that were advertising in there were probably targeting maybe 20-25% of that audience, but since television was the big reach medium, that's the way they had to do it. So there was a lot of, wasted money and targetability. Now, with the increased ability to target specific audiences demographically and psychographically, advertisers are much more interested in zooming in on who their ultimate consumer is. And podcasting is an excellent way to do that, because what we're doing is we're creating a bunch of different communities that are usually populated by the fans of the hosts or the subject matter, the P1 listeners, if you will, the ones who are the most likely to respond to the limited advertising that we put in the programs in order to make them available free to consumers. But if they know that this is a product that the host uses and enjoys, the likelihood of them actually going out and using the product is, you know, is much, much higher. By the same token, when you compare us to traditional radio, we're practically commercial free. You know, if we do 2, 3, 4 minutes of commercials in an hour long program, when you compare that to traditional broadcast radio, that's running anywhere from 12 to 18 minutes of commercials every single hour. I mean, we're, you know, we're a virtual commercial free program. And the hosts, you know, constantly bring up the fact that the advertisers who support this program are the ones who make it possible for the listeners to access it free of charge. When so many people who consume podcasts are used to paying a fee for it. You know, in terms of growing the audience to get to the point where podcasts are used by a much larger percentage of the population, well, that's going to happen. That's going to happen through larger and bigger communities interacting with the other communities that are on the you know, that are digitally expressed on the web through podcasts. And of course, the attention that will be brought to the medium with larger players, with more resources like ourselves and other players who will enter the medium in order to create a larger, more sophisticated medium. I think that will come as a result of that. You know, I wouldn't be spending the time and effort and energy and, you know, and the money if I didn't think that that was going to happen in podcasting, just like it happened in network radio and syndicated radio as well.
Go ahead, Todd.
One thing.
Don't fight, boys. Don't fight.
One thing that I always laugh at is when I talk to the media buyers. Is that, you know, it's audio. I mean, it's video. They just say sexy. Video's sexy, you know. And when you talk to them, you say, listen, you know, people have a lot more time during the day to listen than to watch. You know, you can listen in the car, you can listen, you can watch on the bus too. But you know, there's certain places where listening has just been, it's ingrained in our society. And you know, so as I watch the numbers, there are very, very few shows that do both audio and video that are where their video show is more successful than their audio show. The audio show is you know, leaps and bounds above the video. Now this show, we have a lot more people that listen than watch. You know, they don't need to watch us for an hour and a half or hour and 15 minutes. You know, they can listen and do it when they're on the treadmill or something. So, you know, I just wonder at what point do the media buyers get over this, you know, the YouTube mentality, and maybe it's because it's the media buyers that are using or buying it right now are, you know, the YouTube generation. I don't know. Do you see that as an issue? And with the media buyers?
Well, you know, certainly we're conscious of that. But remember, there's still billions and billions of dollars being spent in radio.
True.
So there are radio departments that are redefining themselves as audio to take advantage of the opportunities digitally that now exist. And, you know, we think that we are providing them with a service.
Right.
I mean, I think the ones that we have talked to have all been rooting for us, and they've been waiting for a player like us to enter to the scene so that they can keep audio media relevant. And I think the key element in audio as well as video is the on-demand nature of the ability to be able to consume the product.
Right.
You know, it's now not the network that decides when you're going to be able to consume your favorite television show or audio program or radio show. That's what's going to give us the real boost. And, you know, one only has to take a look at what just happened in the Emmy nominations to take a look at the effect that the fragmentation of television and the on-demand nature of television has done to viewing patterns. The same thing's going to happen to radio. We just have to make more product and more compelling product available to them. And that's one of the reasons why we're here.
Rob?
So do you think that there's an opportunity for premium paid content here that takes a chunk of this content and makes it available as a subscription, as well as the advertising side? I think there's been this perception, at least in the podcast area, that there really is no opportunity for premium paid content. Do you agree with that, or do you think that we need to be pushing all towards the advertising side and kind of leaving this premium content piece kind of off to the side because it's not going to scale? Is there any opportunity there, you think, in the future that the premium side can develop?
Well, certainly there are opportunities for specific talents who have major followings and huge fan bases to put exclusive programming up that's only available on a paid basis. But those personalities and that subject matter, it's really few and far between. It's hard to find that. I think that the best use of a premium model is through a freemium model, which means that the programming is provided free with advertiser support, and then there are additional services, products, programming that can be made available to those listeners that they have to pay for. I think there's a number of very successful podcasters right now that wind up selling product, additional programming, where the listener has to subscribe for a fee to do so. But I think the most important aspect in really growing podcasting to be able to reach the kind of audience that you were suggesting before has to come through advertiser-supported podcasts that are provided free to consumers. And I think there are a number of different formulas that have proven to be very successful. And what we're doing is simply aggregating all of those successful formulas and putting them in one place so that a consumer can go to Podcast One and look at 200 really very successful products as opposed to having to work their way through 250 or 300,000 podcasts on iTunes or some other site.
One thing that I've seen and something that I've tried to, and I just ran into this last week, was that I was talking with a media buyer and had worked probably a week with this guy getting ready to do some stuff, and we'd been going back and forth on the pricing and really the challenge in closing the deal was the pricing. In the end, what I end up really kind of doing was this gentleman wanted to buy just a month worth of advertising, and I told him, I said, listen, I understand you're used to buying radio and you're used to buying a month of radio, I said, but you got to think about the repetition factor here. Some of these shows are weekly. We don't, we hope a show, we generally never put a show on a buy that's, less than two shows a month. But I says, you're dealing with a different repetition factor. And radio on a Hannity, you're hearing that ad from that advertiser maybe three times an hour. So that is, if they've got a 3-hour program, that's nine times, the 5 days are on there, hearing it 45 times in a week. And you're gonna measure your success rate on a campaign where the ad's only gonna be heard four times. I said a month is not the right number. The right number is to buy 12 weeks, and then at week six you really look and see where you're starting to see your trend line from responses, because there's still that you in the ear type of thing. It has to happen a number of times, and any type of, unless it's super super compelling, for a consumer to react. So. Have you guys been running into those types of challenges where the media buyers are, they're in the radio mindset, but we have to get them re-engaged and understand that the repetition factor isn't as high?
Well, actually what we do and the reason that we're here, and I think the value proposition that we bring to advertisers is we can fulfill the needs that they have right now to be able to buy podcasts and get the same kind of frequency and reach that they get out of traditional radio with a few pluses beyond that. When you're talking about one particular radio program or podcast, if you will, that may run once a week or twice a week or once a month, then you've got that problem.
Yep.
But when you've got 200 different podcasts, some of which run every day, once a week, twice a week, you know, we don't have any monthly programs, but we have daily programs and we have weekly programs and, you know, and a variety of programs, we can put together a package for an advertiser that fulfills all of those frequency needs. And we have found, since most of our support traditionally has come from direct response advertisers, by that I mean the .coms and the 1-800 numbers where they where there's a call to action and they need you to go use access their website or make a telephone call right now. Those kinds of marketers, especially with the data that we have, can tell which spots are pulling for them and which commercial spots are not.
Right.
And they move their spots around from program to program all the time. But what they have found, which is a great selling proposition for us to Madison Avenue advertisers, is that podcasts, the right podcasts, deliver huge results and huge responses better than traditional radio or television. And that's the reason why, you know, they spend a lot of money and a lot of shows and have on a continuing basis for years. So this is all about developing the critical mass that I was speaking about before so that we can give advertisers what they need and we don't have to spend a lot of time explaining why they should do it a different way simply because we're not able to give them what they want.
You know, and I agree with you on the broad base. And in other words, you have let's say you have 200 shows on a buy. And, you know, those are always fantastic buys to have. They're a lot of fun. There's a lot of dynamics in them. But, you know, you still, though, when you boil down to it, there isn't always a cross factor. I think we saw some survey results here in the last year or so that the average, I would call it podcast consumer, listens to 7 to 9 different shows. Mm-hmm. And so if you have those same 7 to 9 shows on the buy, fantastic. You know, you're getting 7 to 9, you're getting a good repetition rate on the ad. But what happens when a part of that demographic of that show only listens to 3 shows and only, you know, the challenge I think we have is, and I agree with you, it's the mass. The more shows you can get on a single buy from a single advertiser, it really solves that repetition factor issue. And all that really boils down to is the advertiser spending enough money to fill that inventory. As much as they spend on radio, I kind of laugh because I think to myself, if they threw a, you know, let's look at a number. If they threw $10 million a quarter, or maybe $25 million a quarter at the podcasting space, we could move an incredible amount of inventory, you know, you know, and look how much they're spending in radio. You know, what do they spend a quarter on radio? $250 million.
Oh no, way more than that. Radio is at its peak. Radio was a $22 billion a year business. Today, even though it's tailed off significantly, radio is still a $16 billion business. It's a big business. Look, when I started Westwood One 35 years ago, maybe 36 by now, God, you know, I hate the age of process. But anyway, when I started Westwood One, you know, maybe syndicated network radio was a $20 or $30 million industry, maybe. And it was, there was no critical mass. 3 years after starting Westwood One, we had $11 million in revenue and we took the company public. A few years after that, we were generating $600 million worth of revenue. The value of our company was nearly $4 billion. And there was $1.5 billion being spent just in the national part, the syndicated part of network radio. So if you can tell the right story and deliver on it, I think there's a very big audience and a very big marketplace out there. And, you know, look, you're in the research business. You guys do a great job of doing research. You know, we're using a variety of research entities as well. And we've had to determine what advertisers were looking for. And one of the first questions that they asked us was, well, after a consumer downloads the program, when do they actually listen to it?
Right.
So we went out and did a fairly large survey that showed that 60% of our audience consumes the download at the time of download, and that 85% of our overall audience consumed it within a couple of days.
Yeah.
Well, that's golden for selling it to an advertiser. Yeah. It means only 15% of the audience may not listen to the podcast within the first 48 hours. And we even went a step further than that because, you know, our podcasts are up there and people can listen to the archival material whenever they want. We're now putting in advertising commercial injection solutions that make sure that the commercials that advertisers are buying that are going in the programs that may be being produced that week, that those commercials are also inserted into our archival shows. So at any time that a consumer goes back and listens to a program that may be 3 months, 6 months, a year old, they're getting the same commercial that's being presented in the current programs. So we're spending a lot of money to make sure that we can tell a great story to advertisers, and we're betting that it's going to work. You know, and if it doesn't work, I'll be surprised, but it won't be the first time I've been surprised.
One thing that we've seen, and, you know, we look at, I love long tail shows, you know, shows that keep on giving month after month that have this great evergreen content. And I tell you, really, if there was show development that needs to be done in the space, you know, if I was a starting a new show, I would really, you know, this show has some pretty good evergreen, has good legs in it because the content from the people that we talk to really, it you know, in a couple of years, this data may expire. But, you know, if I was a new content creator, I'd be focused on content that was really evergreen in nature because those shows over time, boy, I tell you, they can do very well on their remnant inventory. And it's sadly, though, the majority of the shows, you know, they have a very short shelf life and new shows and that type of stuff. You know, no one wants to listen to the news, you know, 3 weeks late or anything like that. But, you know, that's just it's the name of the game. But Rob, I'll let you jump in here. I know you probably got a stack of questions, but interesting conversation so far. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, one thing that I wanted us to talk about was kind of ad loads. You know, we talk about how broadcast radio has, you know, probably 16 minutes of advertising per hour of content. Do you see a lot of pressure here coming in the podcast space to get a little closer to that? And what's going to keep that from happening? And what kind of value do you think that the podcasting space needs to deliver to keep that from happening or needing to happen?
Well, I don't see that being a problem near term or even long term. Because, I mean, first of all, we have one of the reasons we're not taking on a lot of new shows right now is we don't want to outrun our ability to be able to sell the advertising inventory that's in the program, even though it's limited. I mean, we've got plenty of available space right now. So the question is, we need to do a better job of building demand. Well, not a better job. We're pretty much on schedule, but that's what we need to do. That's our mission, is to build advertiser demand while putting out great programs that consumers enjoy consuming. So I don't see that there's any chance at all that we'll ever get to the point where we have to over-commercialize a program. The reason why radio stations have to over-commercialize programs is because they're wedded to a fixed clock. They've got 24 hours of programming. Their programming runs at a specific time. If somebody wants to buy their morning drive time, they got 4 hours of that. And if that's their highest rated day part, if an advertiser wants to buy that and they want to keep selling it, they've got to cram as many spots as they can in that program. Well, we don't have that problem. We're not limited by radio station formats in our ability to be able to reach our consumers. We just have to put it up there and let people know where it is and do a good job of promoting it. If we run out of commercial time, we have the, you know, and we don't want to put more than three or four spots in an hour, then we have the ability of putting on another show or moving it to a different show with similar demographics. And there's plenty of opportunities to do that. So I don't see that as a major problem moving forward. I see it as one of the great advantages of the on-demand medium and being able to go directly to consumers without having to strain our content through a radio station or through a television station. And if you don't mind, I'd like to very quickly talk about what you had said, Todd, about archives and point out something on that archive question that we're proving every day. When we started the company and my partner, Kit Gray, were partners on our rep firm, walked in and said, you know, I'm monetizing a bunch of podcasts that I represent, you know, including Adam Carolla and a bunch of other well-known products. You know, we started out strictly as a rep firm. And then because Dr. Drew basically works for me, I own the Loveline radio show, and he does a number of radio programs for me. And the association between Dr. Drew and Adam Carolla goes back to the original Loveline programs. Mm-hmm. We started creating a lot of new podcasts with Adam and Drew together. And then we went back to the old Loveline archives and pulled out years and years of the old Adam and Drew shows. And those shows are delivering a really large audience just as soon as we made available and promoted it to Adam and Drew's listeners. And we don't have to sell that as remnant inventory.
Right.
It's bringing in a large enough audience that we can go out and charge premium rates for it. So we're looking to put programs on the air that have long tails and that we can use for archival content going forward.
I think that's smart. And a good thing about that is those prime names, you know, they got a lot of fans that are very fanatical, and they tell them, and that's the power of this too. And you know, once we get the agencies to understand that, you know, basically when Adam says, hey, I need you guys to go check this out, you know, they do in mass. And it's because their audiences are so loyal. And I would love to see a loyalty survey on, you know, podcasts across the board where it's fair, when it's compared against some television, you know, some television stuff has very loyal fans too, but look at see where our loyalty mm-hmm. comparability okay. is. I don't think I've ever seen any numbers like that.
Well, why don't you and I do that?
Yeah, it sounds like we should.
Hey, one thing I wanted to ask about and talk here is the tension that exists in the broadcast radio side between local advertising and national advertising, and as we think about podcasting, even global advertising. With the ad insertion technology that you were talking about earlier, it is possible to auto, you know, kind of deliver custom audio to different geos in different locations. Do you see that being an important piece of the pie here going forward as podcasting becomes more of a national medium, but also able to reach local markets that advertising could become local in this content as well as national? Kind of depending on where it's delivered?
Well, it already is. It already is. There's lots of advertisers that buy local radio that are also national advertisers and so forth, and they can access the local market in a variety of ways. What radio has to do, and I mean, look, I'm not going to downgrade radio. I've been a cheerleader for radio for 35 years, and I still do a number of different radio shows that are, you know, traditional broadcast radio programs. But what I think broadcasters have been slow to do is embrace their strengths in order to compete with digital hyper-targeted media in whatever form that it's in. I mean, radio has tremendous strengths locally. I mean, the strength of radio is that it is a local medium that connects with its listeners. But, you know, with some of the changes in ownership that have gone on in recent years and the consolidation of radio, some of the great local marketers, you know, who were owned radio stations and lived in the community and knew the community and sold advertising to businesses that they knew, that's been replaced by giant companies who own hundreds of radio stations. When I got into the radio business, you know, back in the dark ages, nobody, no single broadcast owner could own more than five AMs and five FMs. And that's not a city, that was nationally. Now owners can own, you know, virtually as many radio stations as they want. And most owners, you know, own five or six radio stations in a market, and they dominate a particular format. There's no radio wars because two rock stations are trying to, you know, attract listeners away from another radio station. Those rock stations are all owned by the same guy now.
That's right.
Well, you know, what I want to do and what we're doing and what prompted me to get back into this at both feet at my clearly advanced age compared to most people that are, you know, doing business in the digital space is I love the idea of creating new talent, of exciting new marketing content, of competing with other programs and so forth. And that just doesn't exist in radio like it used to. So I'm going to where it does.
One thing I'll say about the, you know, the local, you know, I would just love to be able to, you know, here's a challenge with podcasting and local is that I think the majority, and there's a few guys that are doing local content. I know Rob up in your area, there's a couple of guys that are focused on the Seattle market and that's all they talk about. But, you know, if I look at my audience and, you know, and if I know I have a certain number of listeners here in Hawaii, but my biggest listener base is California and Texas. And, you know, I don't talk about Texas stuff or California stuff. So I think where the real opportunity is for, you know, for people that want to get exposure is those companies in those towns that have a digital, you know, have something digital. You know, they have an online store on Amazon, or they have a, you know, wherever they have their digital e-commerce place, those are the companies that are going to want to be, you know, in this, because now they don't, they're limited to maybe the Dallas market. Now they get access to a worldwide market. And I think that's been sorely overlooked. And I think it's largely because there's just been no one out there that has had a sales force that will reach into those, you know, those local markets. And you know, I guess, Norm, I'm sure that's part of your guys' strategy.
Well, it is. I mean, if you take a look at Pandora, for instance, Pandora's advertising solution started out as being a national advertising solution. They went to national advertisers to try and get them to buy Pandora in every market. And what they found was that they were getting such tremendous audience in each local market that it made far more sense for them to put together a much larger sales force that focused on individual local markets, because that's where most of the advertising dollars get spent. And I think it's been very positive for them, you know, in terms of the reach of a podcast. I mean, you know, not too long ago, we launched a new podcast with Stone Cold Steve Austin. You know, it's turned out to be really, really successful. I mean, we've had individual episodes that have delivered, you know, on a per episode basis, over a million unfiltered downloads. I mean, it's just incredible. You know, when you get somebody that really works and really clicks, but when you take a look at the overall audience and the makeup of that audience, 20 to 25% of the people that are consuming this guy are outside the country. I mean, you know, we get lots of email and social media interaction, you know, from the UK and from Europe and from, you know, Asia and what have you. So to overlook the fact that though a personality may be very strong in an individual market, which gives them a local advertiser base to sell to overlook the fact that they can market other things all around the world is to be really short-sighted.
You know, I've had media buyers tell me before, we won't pay for any of your media deliveries outside of U.S. and Canada. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what do you mean? The people in the U.K. and their money's not any good?
Well, it depends what kind of a product it is. I mean, if it's a product, you know, that doesn't have, you know, any outlets in any of those countries, I can certainly understand why they wouldn't want to pay for that audience. But, you know, that look, media buying and media selling is a process of negotiation.
That's right.
You know, you walk in with a number and the media buyer is going to do everything they can to make that number smaller.
Right.
Okay. And that's the nature of the beast. It's actually, you know, it's fun and it's exciting and it's stimulating and it's human. You know, I don't want to see, you know, the digital revolution means that we're just going to have programs talking to programs. And I'm not talking about the creative radio programming and television programming that we put on the air. I'm talking about computer programs talking to computer programs so that there's no human interaction at all. If that's the way it's in, count me out.
Well, yeah, I'm seeing a lot of growth in audience outside of the U.S.
It's so huge.
I mean, I think one of the fastest growing markets for consuming even English speaking content is China. That's going to be a huge market for podcasting. It's already sitting, like, I think in the top five most downloaded sources, you know, on a referrer basis in a lot of podcasts, you know, being produced here in the U.S. So, I mean, I think this global part and the local part are kind of the loose ends of podcasting today that are not being adequately addressed around advertising and sponsorship. And I just see so much opportunity there. And I wanted to ask you, Norm, about your distribution strategy, because what's unique about what you're doing, and I think about the podcasting space, is that a network like what you're building can be more directly in control of the distribution part, where your Westwood One probably was not able to be in as much control of the distribution part of the content that you were creating. So how does that fit into the kind of long-term strategy of owning your own distribution and then also working with other companies to distribute your content? What's the tug of war there that you're going to see here in the future?
Well, there's no tug of war. And it's one of the great pluses of doing it this way. You know, at Westwood One, we were as strong as our programs. We didn't own, for most of its existence, we didn't own radio stations. But back during the time when nobody could own more than 5 AMs or 5 FMs, it didn't make any difference, because if your programming was good enough, you could find somebody in the market, maybe not the number one guy, but you could find somebody in the market who would take it. Not so today. If you want to be in the major markets and you've got a really good program and Cumulus or Clear Channel decide that they're not going to carry it on their stations, you're frozen out of the, you know, many of the biggest markets in the country. And it may have absolutely nothing to do with the quality of the program. It may have to do with the economics that are involved, you know, in getting them to carry your show. At Westwood One, you know, we created the company in the early days. I don't think a company like Westwood One could be created today. And when we saw deregulation coming, and knowing that we were going to need to have relationships with station owners or become one, we actually went out and bought, you know, two stations in New York and one in Los Angeles to prepare for that. And then after that, we wound up making a deal with CBS who bought a piece of the company. And Mel Karmazin came over and took over the day-to-day role of CEO while I continued as chairman, because we knew we needed to have a partnership relationship at the very least with a major broadcast group that had outlets in the major markets to make sure that our programs could be exposed there. But now I don't need any of those guys.
Right.
I do for my radio business, but you know, we're clearly moving in the on-demand area. And now all I've got to do is make sure that people know that a wide variety of programs, like a lot of programs that are on our platform, like New York Public Radio and LA Public Radio and CBS and 60 Minutes and probably six out of the top 10 comedy podcasts in the country, and programs in politics and sports and health and what have you. I mean, as long as I have access to those kinds of programs, you know, I've got a cross promotional base that will let me tell podcast consumers where they're going to be. I don't have to be held hostage by major broadcast groups. Yippee. Here's for democracy.
You know, one thing that for us was, you know, a real watershed was when, you know, like the guys with the Roku came out. And even though Roku was primarily a video device, to us, it was like I had went to an event and my thought was in the early days, okay, so we got this, we got these shows, you know, I've got some headliners. Let's get them on television and let's get them into a cable channel. How hard can it be to get into 1,000 and get one channel on a 1,500 channels on a cable network? Well, yeah, easy, you know, how naive I was. And, you know, how easy that was going to be and how much it was going to cost. And that got flushed down the toilet pretty quickly. But the I think we had the 27th channel on the Roku. And even now today, even though there's 400 plus channels on the Roku, you look what's happened with Chromecast. You've looked at what's happened with Google TV and not so much Boxy. They've kind of went under the rug. They're kind of a non-player now. But to me, that was as big of a deal as being able to make the, you know, content available and have it available on Zune, have it available on BlackBerry, have it available on iTunes and all these different places. And, you know, a lot of guys would say, well, I got my .com. I say, yeah, great. They're going to find your show there, but you got to distribute. You got to get your show out in many as places as possibly found. And to me, that was it, that still remains probably the most exciting part of this business is that I don't have to ask anybody permission for anything. We just have to build it and do it.
Well, that's true. And if you do a quality program, that's one leg of the three-legged stool, okay? You know, what you need to be successful is you need a quality program that will attract consumers, listeners, viewers, whatever it is. You need distribution in the marketplace, and you need revenue to pay your bills.
Yep.
So in radio, you need to have radio stations to distribute your product, but, in podcasting, you don't. So right. That's one leg of the stool I don't need. In terms of quality programs, we do the best we can to ensure that our programs are quality programs that have an audience, but there's a certain risk in all of that. If we all know how to pick nothing but hits, that's all we pick.
Right.
So, you know, that's a different game. You know, I'm fond of saying, that the second coming of Jesus Christ would be a 50-50 proposition, you know, in the entertainment business. And so, you know, there are things, you know, you can't have your finger on the thumb of taste all the time or your ability to promote all the time, but this is much more democratic, and I think we have a much better chance of having a much wider variety of thought, information, entertainment available now than ever before in the history of man. I mean, look at the effect it's having on politics, and you know, and the social nature of society around the world. I mean, it's mind-boggling. We're just sitting here talking about, you know, getting some, you know, a few talk shows and some comedians and you know, and public radio and stuff like that, you know, sponsored by some advertisers. But the real impact of all this stuff is just endless.
You know, I had a, I lost my train of thought here. There was a...
Happens to me all the time.
It's like that cog flips over and like, where did that thought go?
Yeah, exactly. Go ahead, thinking about something else.
Yeah, go ahead, Rob. I'll put you on the spot.
Thanks.
Come on, Rob. Think fast.
So I think that the opportunity, I think, for podcasting, as we kind of look into the future, I mean, what's going to be the next big thing about, you know, what's going to really turn the green light on? Is it getting in the car? Is it something that is going to be revolutionary around the distribution platforms that needs, you know, a lot of work around, you know, ease of access, ease of discovery, you know, this whole kind of audience level connection with the platforms that deliver this. That was always so important to broadcast radio, right? Where the dial and the dash was so easy. You turn the car on, and you just turn the radio on, and the radio was there, right? We do have this challenge of complexity with podcasting, and I think that it's getting easier clearly right now. I think more and more apps are making it easier. The medium is moving more towards streaming, which, you know, kind of pulls out this model of, well, you have to download before you can listen and all this kind of stuff, which was around podcasting for a long time. I think that's kind of going away.
Gone.
But yeah, from a strategy perspective with Podcast One and other players out there, where do you see the big growth coming? Is it going to be once apps start being made available in the car, or the phone works more seamlessly with the car? Or do you see that just being kind of one piece of the pie here?
Well, I don't think it's going to come from anything technological. I think there's plenty of technology out there right now. I mean, you know, as far as podcasts are concerned, we're in the car right now. I mean, you know, I can't think of a new car that doesn't have a plug that goes right there or isn't accessible on a Bluetooth. I think what's holding back the growth of podcasting is the fact that there's no serious, reliable source of revenue to grow the medium. And I think that developing a serious, reliable source of revenue to go to the medium will then attract more major players who will invest in the medium. The technology will continue to follow. There'll be more investment in the kinds of technology that benefit podcasting specifically. But right now, there's not enough bang for the buck financially to have the kind of attention paid to podcasting technologically to make it worthwhile.
You know, if you look back, you know, and here's, and I guess maybe it gets back to the train of thought I lost earlier. You know, when I started my show, my tech show in 2004, you know, my goal really, and I dabbled in a lot of stuff prior to that. You know, my goal when I started this, I said, man, this thing's got to make money in 2 years or my wife's going to kill me. And so we laid out a little bit of a business plan, and we planned where we wanted to be. And lucky enough, by May of 2005, GoDaddy had come on and sponsored, and we brought them into the space. And I was responsible for bringing Citrix into the space and advertising. And those two companies, you know, we need to, a lot of people need to give them a lot of credit, because they fueled a lot of podcasts for a lot of years, and still today do, with a lot of money coming in from an advertising standpoint. So from those two companies are always have a special place in my heart, because they put their money where their mouth was. But long story short, there was, you know, we basically knew from the very, very beginning, early on, that there was really going to be three types of content creators in this space. And Norm, you guys work with top tier guys, and they are absolutely content creators by trade. That's their job. That's their life. You know, that's how they, you know, that's what the cash going into their bank account is directly from that. But what we learned real early on was that there was the hobbyists, the guys that were creating content that were doing it for just pure fun and and to learn the trade. There was the guys that were in the middle that wanted to have a show and are still doing shows, but their audiences weren't maybe large enough to pay for a house payment, but maybe enough for a car payment. And then there was the third group of people that, you know, that are the top tier folks that, you know, looked at this as business, this is their full-time job. And so what we have is we've got a good third tier base that has a, you know, maybe 5% of the content creators in the space. But this middle group, which delivers incredible numbers on a monthly basis, 40, 45 million listener views. And, you know, compared to TV and radio, that's not a lot, but you got this middle group there that may not have these huge audiences, but still as a whole want to make money.
If you aggregate them, yeah.
If you aggregate them and have enough inventory, you turn those middle guys into maybe at some point that top tier. And so for us, you know, the goal has been, you know, try to keep those guys moving along and keep them creating content. You know, and fortunately, a number of shows have stuck with it over time. But this space has a tremendous amount of burnout. We see, you know, maybe 75% of shows never make it through their first year or past like episode 25. And I think largely that's in part because they figure out this is hard work. It's not easy.
Yeah, it's tough to be a quality content provider right. That builds an audience. You know, I think that's the thing. You know, that's why you have that tier that's so popular, right? That has so many followers, and that list of shows is pretty small. Because this is difficult to do, and I think that's the challenge that podcasting has had all along is that it has had this big long tail, and I think that's been a strength of it, which is. Always been what's different than on the broadcast side, which the broadcast side has always had just the top tier shows and hasn't had a long tail. So I guess that's a great question for Norm. So how do you see the long tail fitting into your strategy, Norm?
Well, there that needs to shake out a little more, and that's where technology is playing a large role right now. I mean, look, for the hobbyist, you know, be my guest. I mean, I think it's great, you know, the idea that, you know, anybody can, you know, go out and put on a podcast and it can be consumed all over the world. How cool. But, you know, if you're going to be a hobbyist, you better be able to afford whatever it costs to be able to do that. If you're going to be in that middle category, and believe me, we get hundreds of communiques from individual podcasters that are probably in that center category that you're talking about weekly, wanting to know what they have to do to get on the Podcast One platform. And so we ask for information and things like that. And they wind up, you know, having 100 or 200 downloads, and, you know, social media of 27 or, you know, things of that sort. And, you know, we can't do anything with that.
Right.
We were actually thinking about creating a Podcast One underground, which was a place that people could go to look at thousands of different podcasts like they can at other sites that may not have much reach or much of a following. And we thought, well, you know, we'll offer them bandwidth at a discount. And we'll offer them the opportunity to be, you know, on the Podcast One platform, on the underground. And if they develop enough audience, we'll move them up to the front page, you know, and we'll start aggregating and what have you. But then, you know, all of a sudden, bandwidth has become much less of an issue. You know, bandwidth that used to cost, you know, 10, 20 cents a gig is now available for free on some platforms. So, you know, now the question is, what is it that, you know, because we don't want to just take on pure cost with the idea that one out of these several thousand podcasts could someday deliver the size of the audience that we need to make money with it. So we're kind of, you know, falling back and watching and see what's going to happen. And we're leaving that to others. We don't have a problem with any of the programs that we have on Podcast One being available on any other platform because we're selling audience to advertisers and we want as much audience as we can get. We will do some things going forward that will make Podcast One, you know, a destination that people will want to come to for things other than just downloading podcasts and try and create some stickiness. But those are, you know, we'll roll those out as we're able, and that'll be in the near term, not the long term. But as far as being, you know, a podcast platform or host for all comers, it's unlikely that we'll be doing that until we see a service that we can provide to those producer/publishers and a way to be able to monetize it that makes it worth doing.
And, you know, I think what will happen too, Rob, is more inventory. You know, here's the key, and people don't believe me, and I know Norm will, but if more dollars come into the space, more advertising dollars come into space, those middle group folks will be then Well, even if let's say they're making a house payment and they have their regular job. I tell you what, when I was in my 20s, if I could have had my regular job and made a house payment with a part-time job, that'd have been fantastic, you know. So if we get to the point where there's enough money in the space and those middle ground folks are getting on a monthly basis, they're making money on their shows. And if they, you know, there's certain, let's just boil down to it. Audience size is critical. If without an audience size, if you have an audience of 100, you're not making no money. It's not going to happen. But if you have an audience size of 30, 40,000 and more, you're going to be doing, you can do very well. So, you know, I guess it really boils right back down to the cash. If the cash comes to space with the advertisers, then a lot of this stuff resolves itself. But at the same point, too,
when they say it's not about the money, it's about the money.
That's right. and another thing, too, is that with that is going to come, you know, and what we've had to do internally at Raw Voice is, you know, we've had to really, you know, I have to do training. I'm like, listen, this is the, you know, I listen to you, you see, you know, send me a sample of your ad spot. No. We need to talk about this delivery. So, you know, with that, we have a responsibility to make sure that we're not just dumping ads in and the content creators are just, well, today. And we need to make sure that they understand that the delivery mechanism of the advertising is as important as the content. So, and if they keep that same priority there, it'll definitely keep the advertisers happy and also build shows and build, you know, build volume. So.
Well, further to your point about the advertisers that we owe a debt of gratitude to for being the first supporters of the medium, the Citrix and the GoDaddy and others in that space, when we get to the point where they will let us aggregate 100 different radio podcasts that have small audiences and charge them a reasonable amount of money so that so that podcasters who are making nothing will be happy with a little something rather than a lot of something, we could prove with direct response advertisers that approach works.
And that's something that, you know, I guess we've, you know, the approach I've always had is from an advertising standpoint is I try to keep the advertisers from cherry picking shows, and they always want the biggest, but I've always said, hey, let me build the buy, let me present it to you. And we've been pretty successful on our side of the fence from being able to get those smaller shows on buys. And yeah, exactly. They have the direct response. But what I've done is I've done a little different. I've grouped them together all under maybe they're all promoting the same promo code. So they rise and fall as a group versus one show. Maybe it's okay. That show that I gave a code to, he didn't produce anything. As a group, we've had, you know, the success of campaigns and that's worked out pretty well for us, over the years, but still some advertisers want each show to have their own tracking code, which is fine, but it's a lot of work when you want to put 200, 300, 400, 1,000 shows on a buy, that's an administrative nightmare for the buyer.
Well, technology save us all.
Yeah, it will.
So I wanted to kind of raise the conversation up to like a 30,000 foot view here of the podcasting space and on-demand radio and just ask both you guys if we can talk about this from the standpoint of podcasting as an industry. What do you guys think we need to do to be able to better as an industry speak with more one voice, to have more consistency across the reporting stuff? And I know, Todd, you're working on this podcast certification stuff, but more looking at it, I mean, if you look at the broadcast radio business, it's been mostly pretty unified over the years. All of the big players get together on a regular basis and they talk about how we're competing with each other, but yet we're all kind of singing from the same page, right?
Playing from the same page.
And podcasts have been up to this point, you know, like corralling cats, right? Everybody's running off doing their own thing, and there isn't really any cohesiveness that is in this space. Norm, do you think that that's an important piece to this for this on-demand radio podcasting area to really reach its potential?
Hugely important. Hugely important. What advertisers want is they want uniformity of measurement. Okay. Right now, there's, you know, dozens of different hosting sites and platforms, all of which use their own proprietary technology to count downloads, filter them, using different terms for what it is, what the filtered number is, some using impressions, some using other things. And clearly, it doesn't make it easier to sell that concept to advertisers. So what we are doing is we're creating a uniform hosting platform for all of our new shows, and for as many of our represented shows that will agree to come on it with us. And I will say this, we're having very good success getting program, our producers and publishers of the programs that we represent to agree with the concept that we need to be uniform in our measurement and to join us in the search for the absolute most effective and efficient way to present ourselves to advertisers. So that's very big. We're investing a lot of money in research to determine the best way to do it and in actually providing early stage development of the kind of technology that's necessary to get the advertisers the answers that they want. But once again, to draw the Westwood One to Podcast One coalition to the argument, when I started presenting syndicated radio programs to national advertisers, the only source of measurement was the Arbitron Nationwide Survey. That was a survey of local radio station shares and average quarter hours produced twice a year. So when we started to build that business, we had nothing. Podcasting has something. It's just not uniform. And it needs to be developed in a way that makes advertisers more comfortable with it. Also, podcasters, we just joined the IAB, which stands for Internet Advertising Bureau, I think. I think it's Interactive Advertising. But that's a terrific group that has a number of significant players in it who are working to advance the medium. They have seminars all the time, bring groups together all the time in order to create consensus among the members to present the medium in a professional way. And that is Interactive Advertising Bureau. That's the name of the organization. Yeah. You know, I was fortunate enough to just recently give one of the keynote speeches at a recent function that they had in San Francisco. But those are the kinds of things we need to do. But, you know, when you're dealing with an industry that very respectably has been kind of, you know, a series of different mom and pop stores. One of the key categories that draws lots and lots of consumers is the comedy space. And a lot of these comedians are very talented comedians who have spent their careers being screwed by club owners, networks, producers, and what have you. And they love the idea of being in control of their own destiny. And they don't want to hook up with anybody. They just want to be left alone. So it's going to take a little bit of time to get everybody, singing off the same song sheet. But I definitely think it's coming. Advertisers need to be patient. We need to be patient, but it's coming, and it will follow the money.
You know, I have to laugh because, you know, it doesn't happen so much more, but in the early days, it's even as a couple of years ago, people would call me and said, "Ted, hey, Todd, I want to work with you, blah, blah, blah. I've got X number of listeners." And sometimes that X number would be very big. And I thought, fantastic, great. It sounds like you got a successful show. Let's get you up on our stat system and we'll look at it for a month and then we can see where it will be. Well, what do you mean I have to run your stats? Well, it's, I trust you, but I got to verify, you know, trust and verify,
right,
you know,
trust and verify.
And then all of a sudden, you know, these individuals, all of a sudden I'm like, it's up to you. You can get signed up. Let me know when you're up. And they would disappear. I'd never hear from them again. Because, you know, so, I think in the early days, even some of the, there was some loose and fast stuff that was happening in space. And I, you know, part of my goal from the very, very beginning early on is I don't care what the number is. I just want to know what the number is. You know, I don't care if it's a million, it's a million. If it's 100, it's 100. The key is we got to know. And, you know, if I'm going to stake my reputation on signing an insertion order and signing a, and sending in the reporting at the end of the month, the last thing I want is someone to come in here and demand an audit. And we throw stuff up in front of them. And then I have to write a check because the reporting was wrong. So I think from my perspective, as a business perspective, is we always wanted to know what the number was. And I think if people get, you know, the numbers are important. Let's you know, we can't deny that. The higher the number, the better. But the we just have to know where things are at on an even playing field. And I agree with you, Norm. If people are going out and saying one thing and it's another, you know, it's just, it's pure math. If, you know, if a guy's been advertising on radio and he knows that, for example, if he reaches 1,000 people, he's going to sell 20 widgets, you know, and if he advertises on a podcast and he thinks he's advertising to 1,000 people and he sells 10 widgets, well, he thinks the advertising sucks. But if in fact the actual number was 250 people that he reached and he sold 10 widgets, oh my God, this is the best advertising space to be in. So, you know, it's all in it. The number is absolutely incredibly important, but, you know, I have to, in what quite frankly pisses me off is that the advertising folks, and I think it's mostly the digital, not the radio guys, they understand better, but the digital folks, they hold us to a higher standard than they hold TV and, it's just to me, it's like it's crazy. And I said, I've got the real data. I have real tangible stuff here, and
that's not good enough.
It's not good enough.
Well, the problem is, you know, with that sometimes the digital data can become so granular that advertisers who are trying to buy an audience and pay the least amount of money that they can for it,
right,
will hold digital to a higher standard because digital can give the granularity that network television and traditional broadcasting can't. And, you know, is it fair for their, you know, to be judged on the same cost per thousand when the information is far more targeted and far more useful? You know, that's a battle that you have to fight as a negotiator every single day. But the key word here is credibility. We've had a very good reception at the major advertising, I'll call them Madison Avenue, quote unquote, advertisers. We've had a very good reception at all of those places because we have a 35-year history at Westwood One of delivering credible, reliable audience information. And we've said we're going to do the same thing at Podcast One. So people are giving us some room to be able to do that. But, you know, we have to deliver and we will. We're prepared to spend what it takes to be able to deliver on that promise. But they need reliability. They don't want to be surprised. Right. They don't want to look bad. They don't want to go out on a limb and have that limb chopped off. And they deserve to have credible, reliable information with which to make, you know, the right decisions.
Yep. And I agree wholeheartedly as well with that entire statement, because after all, if they're going to continue to spend money in this space, you know, as much as sometimes you hate the relationship you have with them, you got to love them at the same time because they keep you in business, you know?
Well, I mean, I think this is going to be, you know, a $1 billion business in the not too distant future. And nobody's going to plunk down $1 billion and cross their fingers and say, geez, I hope these numbers are right.
That's true. That's true.
One piece I wanted to talk about here too is, Norm, you're building kind of your own distribution piece of this. you start looking at like an iTunes, or you look at, you know, these big aggregator platforms that have existed and really kept podcasting alive here over the 8 years it's been going. You know, those platforms have not been able to monetize really in any way to keep investing in those platforms. And we talked about this, I know, a little bit earlier in the show, but I wanted to come back to it and talk about it more specifically. What are the ways potentially that you see down the line of the distribution side? And I know that on the broadcast radio side for many years that the distribution side was able to share in revenue. Are there opportunities, you think, and should those opportunities be presented to large platforms that are aggregating huge numbers of listeners and audience to share in some of this revenue so they can justify keeping the investment flowing into those software platforms?
He's talking, he won't say it, Norm, but he's talking about Xbox.
Well, you know,
I didn't say that, Todd.
He didn't say that, but I think I'm using a little psychic ability here.
Crossed my mind. You know, rather than telling them how to do it on global TV, I'd rather have them just give me a call. There's answers to every question, okay?
Yes, that's right.
But, you know, I mean, look, the reality is we're a platform. We're going to be providing these services with the help of others who provide these services. But we intend to, you know, we think it's a very profitable place to be. You know, I don't think that that's a problem that is in search of a solution. I think there are solutions out there right now. And that's where I'm going to leave it. Look, I've very, told you guys well everything said. I know. Like, let me keep a couple of things to myself, okay?
You know, and you know, this is it's you know, for in all, just to be honest, you know, I'm always badgering Rob on the Xbox side, and you know, but I also got to understand, you know, players like that, like Microsoft's position, and different, you know, you look at Sony and the PlayStation. Those are serious cash cows for those companies. Those, you know, those put serious dollars in the corporate bank accounts every quarter for them. So for, you know, for them to give up space in those devices, you know, it's, there has to be revenue. It's just the way it works. And I understand it completely. Not necessarily do I like it, but at some point, maybe though, if the consumer demand gets high enough, I think that those platforms will have to say, well, you know, this it may not put a lot of zeros in the bank, but we need to have more of this content on there. I can only hope. I don't know. The majors are obviously on there, but it's going to be harder to get the other tiered content in, I think, over time.
Well, they're certainly not going to focus on it while podcasting in general is the smaller business as it is, right, as it is right now.
Right.
You know, when we prove the thesis that there is lots of revenue to be generated from this medium, then those meetings are going to get easier to set up. But those are meetings, you know, Rob, I'd love to pursue that question with you, because I think there are mutually beneficial answers to every question that can be asked on that subject.
Another thing I've seen too is, you know, what happened in 2005, July of 2005, Apple brought iTunes into this, basically added podcasting to iTunes. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, there'd been a lot of development. A lot of folks had been doing a lot of different things there was, you know, code being written to write apps and websites. And as soon as Apple kind of jumped in space, that killed a majority of that. Not all. We're still around. And you know, companies like you guys are hard charging. But it really put a damper, I think, on the space. I think they hurt the space as much as they helped. Now, don't get me wrong, the numbers were incredible that they brought in, but it was just like this instant gift, and then there was no more gift giving, because the audience that came from iTunes was what it was. And but we haven't seen this big, you know, a big new player, a big new space. Do you think we're going to have any competition against these? I think, and that's probably where Rob really wanted to ask too, was, do you see any additional, you know, locations where this content's going to become mainstream. Obviously, you guys want to come over to podcastone.com, of course, but what's your thoughts on that?
Well, as I said before, we have our content in a variety of different places, and we're happy to have it in those places to build, you know, as much audience as we can, and to make it easy for consumers, you know, to get our product. The one thing that we want to do, and sometimes prevents us from being on other platforms, is, you know, we're going to sell the inventory, right, to advertisers, and we can't have five different people selling inventory in the same programs. Right. In our own programs, we represent them, we sell them exclusively, and a major portion of our represented programs we sell exclusively. There are some things that we don't sell exclusively, but, you know, the more things that we're able to supply to our producer publishers that make it easy for them to do what they do and easier for them to see the revenue that we can generate for them, the more we'll get, over to our place. But right now, you know, we want all the platforms to grow and expand. The key for us is we're program producers. We're content. We are content guys, you know, and my feeling is, there's a lot of different ways to distribute content these days, and there will be a lot of different ways to develop content tomorrow that we don't know about today. But content is content. Yep. And if you hook your wagon to providing great content, then however it's distributed, you're going to be in pretty good shape.
Yep. Rob?
Well, and hopefully the overall audience for podcasting grows. Because that's going to raise everybody's opportunities across the board, whether it be the platforms or the content providers themselves. And how do you see us as an industry being able to do that? And I really want to start talking about what we do in this space as an industry more and more. And I think that really hasn't started to happen yet. I know probably 3 or 4 years ago, there was a group that got together. It was called the ADM, it was the Association of Downloadable Media, that started to try and coalesce this industry together. And there was a lot of infighting and a lot of issues that happened on that. You know, I was on the board back then. And
gosh, what a surprise.
And it just didn't work. But for this industry to grow and get to where it needs to be, does there need to be some organization like that that we all rally behind?
Well, I think that IAB is a good opportunity to do that. A lot of players are already there. But, you know, the kinds of mom and pop operations that I described before, who like doing it by themselves, you know, kind of view themselves as anti-heroes, you know, you're probably never going to get them. The way we build the medium for consumers is to have more consumers aware of the medium. I mean, I walk into advertising agencies today where bright people don't know what a podcast is.
Right.
They don't know that POD stands for programming on demand. They think it's because, you know, it's something that you can get on an iPod. Okay. So it's an educational process. So we have to educate our advertisers. We have to educate our consumers. We have to educate our producers. And the more attention that we get through programs like this and through the traditional press and through success stories that we can talk about, the more people will understand that on-demand radio really reaches more people than on-demand video. And we're only reaching 35% of the country. Yeah. This is a huge opportunity for us. I wouldn't be there if this business was a mature business and we were reaching 95% of the public and only doing the revenue that we're doing right now. That would equal failure. There's a tremendous opportunity in front of us, and I think we just have to, you know, get the message out there. You guys have to do it. I have to do it. Everybody we talk to has to do it. We may have to spend some money going out there and advertising in old line media to let them know where we are and who we are. But look, 3 years ago, nobody knew that Adam Carolla was a big time podcaster. They thought Adam Carolla was a guy who got fired from CBS, who did pretty good on the radio, and was out doing something else they didn't know what. But now, a lot more people than just the 35% who download podcasts know that Adam Carolla is a successful podcaster, even if they don't know what podcasts are.
Yeah.
So we'll get there.
So do you think that the term podcast will last the test of time, or is this medium gonna become referred to as on-demand radio? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think podcast can stand the test of time, but I don't think it's important if it does or if it doesn't. You know, what we're talking about is a really, in the strictest sense, you know, a marketing handle. So if it turns out that it's podcast with a sub headline, which is on-demand audio, that's fine. You know, I don't view that as an impediment to anything. Right now, podcasting serves us very well, and I'm happy to let it serve us, you know, well into the future. But if that turns out not to be the case, you know, we're digital, we're on demand, we can turn on a dime, right, guys?
That's right.
That's true.
All you gotta do is go out and buy another .com and launch another website. It's not a big deal.
No. We'll just call GoDaddy and set it right up.
Rob, we're already at an hour 25 here. So, any closing thoughts, Rob?
Well, I think it's fantastic what you're doing, Norm, and I really applaud you and your vision, and what you bring to the podcasting space is just tremendous. And Todd and I both wish the most luck to you and what you're trying to do here, and we definitely want to be supportive of you. And I'm sure that there's thousands of other podcasters that are excited to have you in this space.
Well, if we're successful at doing what we're doing, I mean, I think it's going to be, you know, good for everybody. You know, everybody might not agree with that, but I think it will be good for everybody. And, you know, we're willing to put in the time and the effort and the energy and the money to make this happen. And you know, look, you know, you guys have been around it longer than I have, much longer than I have, and you know many aspects of it much more than I do. But it's, you know, it's hanging out with guys like you that gives us the comfort to know where the good roads to go down are and where this, you know, caution signs are and what we should be doing. So, you know, I hope that this is just the beginning of a long and successful collaborative association. So I wish us all the best.
And, you know, I think it's going to be an interesting time. It's definitely, you know, it's kind of weird, and I say this all the time, I thought we'd be a lot farther along than we are now. And, and it's really incredible that we're already 8 years and, or actually 9 years into the, you know, the podcasting genre as it is. And some people will contest that a little bit, saying, oh, on demand was available before that, but irregardless, you know, if you think about where radio was in its first 9 years, you know, we were still infants at this point. So,
well, yeah, but remember, radio was the only game in town.
That's right. That's true.
Okay. You know, we're in there with a hugely expanding, a group of media opportunities, and we've got to get our voice heard and punch through it. This is a great opportunity. It may have taken us 8 or 9 years to get to the point where they have the opportunity to do it, but I think the future is really, really bright.
Yeah, I believe as well. Well, Norm, thanks so much. And of course, folks, if you let me bring the, make sure you get over to podcastone.com, check out the programming over there. A lot of names that you're already familiar with. Just see scrolling across the screen here, Tom Green Radio. We've got, of course, Adam's Corolla shows up there. Steve Austin Show, Rooster Teeth. You guys are familiar. I'm familiar with that one there. That's a good one. And then, of course, a lot of news and politics shows that are mainstays that are out there as well. So definitely go over to Podcast One, check out their content. And Norm, you and your team, you guys are going to be busy. So
we're going to be busy, but this has been a lot of fun. Let's all room together next semester.
Yeah, there we go.
Party.
So, Rob, who do we have coming up next Saturday?
Let me pull up my doc here.
And while Rob,
and go ahead. We have Rachel from Stitcher.
Oh,
that's going to join us.
Okay, fantastic. As a matter of fact, Stitcher is now sending a signal out anytime someone listens to a show on Stitcher, where we can actually pull that data into the stat system. It's pretty cool to start to see the true Stitcher numbers, because we haven't been able to see that besides on their own platform before. So I was glad they did that. So we'll have to talk to her about that next week. So Stitcher next week. Of course, you can send an email here to either Rob or myself. It's rob@newmediashow.com or todd@newmediashow.com. You can find me on Twitter @GeekNews. Rob, you can find yourself at Rob Greenlee.
And if you want to send me your podcast, if you don't have the podcast in the Windows Phone Zune podcast catalog, send it to podcasts@microsoft.com.
And of course, you can follow Podcast One on Twitter as well. @Podcast One is where their Twitter address is. Make sure you follow them and keep abreast of what's going on. And if you're a content creator, we want to hear your feedback. And anything that you do send us, we can filter to Norm if you have comments to Norm as well. So to his team. Norm, thanks.
Yeah, or call me.
Okay. Love it. So, all right, yep. Guys, thanks so much. And for our online audience, thanks for being here. Take care. We'll see you next time.
Okay, see you later, everybody.